Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Golf Shake podcast. Matt, we are on episode 15 of this season.
That's incredible. Can you believe it? That's incredible.
It has to be said as well, this is our second attempt at doing this because we had some serious technical issues on Monday when we normally record this. And yeah, it just wouldn't let us record anything. We got about 5 minutes worth of content and then everything sort of shut down. And being the busy people that we are, this is the first time we've been able to get back together again and have a bit of a chat. But safe to say, we've got lots to talk about. Obviously,
we saved the good stuff, didn't we?
Yeah, of course we did. Yeah, and it's given us a few more days of prep and a bit more information to bring to you as well. So we're going to gloss over what happened last week in golf, have a bit of a talk about what's going on this week, and then also we've got a couple of topics to discuss as well. So let's start, Matt, with last week's golf. So on the PGA Tour, we had the Heritage from Harbour Town. Did you watch loads of this?
Yeah, I did watch a fair bit, and it was I shared a clip of the podcast from last week where I called Jordan Spieth and you called Matt Fitzpatrick, and wouldn't you know it, those two guys were in a playoff on
sometimes
Sunday night.
We know what we're on about, don't we? It's very seldom, but sometimes we do.
Yeah, good guesswork from you and I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, no, it was a brilliant playoff. Yeah, it was enjoyable. It's a good fun golf course to watch, I think, and you know, it was a good field. Yeah, it's another great, good, solid PGA Tour event, really.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, some drama there as well. And yeah, we'll get on to there's some really good memes that have come out of that with Billy Foster waiting for Patrick Cantlay to get on with it, and the whole slow play kind of conversation rumbled on from the Masters and into the Heritage. And yeah, I mean, he did take a long time, didn't he, to play a couple of shots. I do remember watching him discuss with his caddy about a 70-yard shot out of the trees that was basically the easiest little, either he was just discussing whether he was going to go high or low, basically, but it was a pretty simple shot, and it took him about 5 minutes to decide what he was going to do.
Yeah. It's not good. I tried to swerve any talk about slow play this week.
I think had a little bit to say about it as well afterwards, didn't he? Just basically said he thought it was unacceptable that people weren't penalised and it's taken such a long time for people to even talk about it properly.
Yeah. I've got a funny stance on this, to be honest, because firstly, look, I'm not trying to defend Patrick Cantlay in any way, shape or form, but you know, he ain't the only one. He gets called out the week before at the Masters, maybe rightly so, but do we know how long the people were in front? Do we know how long they were waiting on each shot? But golf does have an issue with pace of play, I think, both in professional and at amateur level, but both for different reasons.
In the Masters, they're playing in two balls, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's taking them like over five hours to play in a two ball. And apparently, I mean, I wasn't at Augusta, unfortunately, but apparently the group in front of Cantlay and Hovland were well ahead of them as well. Yeah, I think there was quite a bit of space, and certainly I think they'd finished on 18 before they'd even put it out on 17. Do you know what I mean? So there was a nice gap, but there was a stat went up that I saw that Rahm and Koepka, if you combined the amount of time that they were just stood on tees waiting, it was 90 minutes.
Yes, I saw that.
Which is ridiculous. An hour and a half.
Yeah.
Just stood there. But yeah, it's bonkers. But yeah, anyway, great win for Fitzpatrick. He did look very, very good. And I also saw a stat yesterday that he holed something like 63 out of 63 putts from inside 8 feet all week, which is seriously impressive.
Yeah. Just go and find an 8 foot putt on your course and try and hold 10 in a row.
Yeah, two. It's
difficult. I've backed myself to hold two, but also not in the same spot. That's the thing. It's like, you know, you think, okay, if you find a fairly, you know, easy-ish putt, you know, a little kind of right edge, you know, and 8 foot away, you know, one after the other, it becomes easier. But yeah, different 8 foot putts.
Yeah, but it's still very, very impressive. I mean, yeah.
Although I'll tell you what, after my aim point session yesterday, I backed myself.
I was going to ask you about that because I did see that video of that putt that you thought you'd missed about 5 foot right that hooked in.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the story. I can do it now or we can come back to it. It's up to you.
No, let's talk about it now. I think we're done talking about PGA Tour. So let's talk about aim point then.
Yeah, so I'm an aim point user. I have been for about 5 or 6 years. And I got the option to, basically there was a guy that had come over from Sweden who was looking to level up his aim point certifications, if you like, or qualifications.
Yeah.
And what that meant was that Jamie Donaldson, who's like the main, I suppose the main guy in the UK for aim point, who's based out of Woburn, he asked for a few people that had done it before to go and do a kind of refresher session. And it was this Swedish guy, William, who was really, really good. He was taking the session with obviously Jamie watching over. So it was nice to get over to Woburn and do that yesterday for a couple of hours in the sun and just refresh some fundamentals that, you know, you kind of do forget after doing something for 5 years. You might get a bit sloppy in your routine and in practice. And, you know, I'm definitely guilty of not using it enough at my home course because I think, oh, yeah, I know where this is going to go. I know. But, so I'm going to go back to that. But, yeah, basically there was I shared it on my Instagram and on Twitter, Matt Holbrook 86 on both. Of a putt that I hit, we was doing these double breakers and it was kind of uphill and left to right. And the way that you take the read for aim point on a double breaker is you almost take it in the middle point. So even if you feel like it's flat, but you know it's going to go massively right to left, massively left to right in either direction, as long as you're aiming straight at a hole, it's a crazy thing to almost trust yourself. So the putt that I hit, I'll be honest, I was on a fairly steep slope where the ball went left to right, straight off the putter face. And I'll be honest, I thought I pushed it straight away. I was walking after it because I thought I'd pushed it in a really bad putt. But just trusting the read, as it got closer to the hole, it just started breaking right to left as I knew it would, but I didn't think I was anywhere near the hole and it just dropped in.
Yeah.
I held my hands up and, you know, openly admitted that I thought I just hit a massive push. But it is that feeling, that sensation of hitting a putt off a hanging left to right lie, right to left if you're left-handed, where it is going to dive straight right off the putter and you think, oh, you've hit a bad one. And it just, the break and the read just does the rest. And yeah, I'm a big fan of aim point. It was a game changer for me in terms of green reading and putting. So I'm looking forward to playing some golf this weekend. And
I have done like the aim point express clinic before with Jamie. And I mean, I use bits of it. I would say I'm definitely not an aim point user really, but I will use parts of it particularly if I'm unsure as to something.
Yeah.
I'll use it sometimes, but it's
with your feet.
It's not something I've really brought into my game massively, I wouldn't say, but it certainly made me walk around putts more and kind of feel the ground with my feet more before hitting putts. But and certainly with my coaching, I would sort of bring that in a little bit as well with people who struggle to read putts. But yeah, it's obviously a great system and loads of players use it out there on tour. And it works, you know. So if it's going to help people hold more putts, then yeah, why not? But yeah, you guys can get booked onto an aim point express clinic as well, either through Jamie or he does them at clubs all over the country. So pretty sure if you have a look at him, find him on social media, you'll find somewhere that is going to be hosting something. And you know, he's obviously based at Woburn as well, so if you want a trip to a wonderful golf course like that, you can do as well.
Yeah, it was I highly recommend it to anyone. I recommend not going onto YouTube because I know the certified aim point instructors generally don't put any content on YouTube. It's brilliant. But I also got the chance to do a bit of speed work with him afterwards as well, which was a bit eye-opening for me. Yeah, I'm literally buzzing. Like, I'm playing golf this afternoon, but I could quite happily just go and putt for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But like you say, like so many major winners use it. Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, Justin Rose, a lot of the top lady players use it.
They do. I mean, it's a great, like I say, it's a great system and it absolutely works. So if you're someone who's really struggling with your putting, it could be something that will help you to gain a bit more confidence, if anything. What else have you been up to this week, then, mate? You played much golf?
Have I played much golf? Just a few holes in the afternoon here and there. But as we sit here now, Friday morning, isn't it? I'm playing this afternoon. I'm going to go up to Felixstowe and have a game this afternoon. And then I'm playing Saturday and Sunday. But that's it. No, I feel like I've done a lot of practice this week.
Good.
Which is nice.
I tried to play 8 holes the other day before the AGM. I say tried because I played rugby on Friday night and someone nearly ripped my thumb off, so it's absolutely killing me. But I tried to play 8 holes and played absolutely shocking.
This is what happens when you do things like play rugby, though. You're going to get these silly little injuries.
It'll be all right in a few weeks' time when I've got some comps coming up. But I still haven't played. They're the first 8 holes I've played at Howley this year.
Wow.
And I can't see myself playing too much more before the start of May, I wouldn't have thought. But we'll hopefully, because I need to play some rounds to get sharp for these tournaments I'm playing in. But yeah, we'll see. It's just time as well. Just so busy every day at the minute, which is great. Don't get me wrong, but there's a lot going on. So yeah, like I said, alluded to before, we had our AGM at the golf club this week. Obviously chance for the members to come in, find out how the club's been getting on in the last 12 months, ask questions of some of the board of directors. We have new directors coming onto the board as well. And it's pretty much how every members club in Britain runs, really, and to be honest, most all over the world. But it'd be interesting. Do you ever get involved in anything like that at your club, Matt? Or
So at my previous club, there was a smaller membership base, and I was actually on the committee. They gave me the title of press and social media, whatever. Basically, I sent reports into the local newspaper and looked after the Twitter and Facebook account for the golf club. I then was asked probably 2 years ago by almost like a subcommittee at my current golf club where I kind of didn't want to get involved. I'll be honest, I didn't. But the lady that asked me in such a way that kind of made it very difficult for me to say no. And she's a lovely, lovely lady. And it was a case of, we really want to get some young, fresh blood involved in the golf club. And I thought, oh, I can't say no now. I can't say no. She'd put me in the young bracket. But that didn't last very long. That committee was soon, it disbanded or whatever you want to call it. It just, was a plus-to requirement. So, no, I went to the AGM recently. We had ours 2 weeks ago, but that was mainly because they mix it with a prize giving. So we don't have like a big presentation evening. Lots of golf clubs do. It's just a case of dishing out the trophies before the AGM.
Yeah.
So I hung around for the first kind of 15, 20 minutes of the AGM. But then my next it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that as a golf pro, because I'm not a member of the club, I don't really, this is only the second one since I've been the pro here in like 7 or 8 years that I've been to, because the board just asked me to go. It, like I say, it's not really that much to do with me in terms of like the operation of my business, but it's obviously I'm part of the golf club and I want to know what's going on, and I want members to sort of see that I'm, I'm obviously very invested in what's going on here at the golf club as well. So it was good from that perspective to see what's going on. You know, every golf club in Britain, there's good things, there's bad things, there's things we can do better. And I thought that the board here at Howley, whilst, they're not perfect, they kind of owned the mistakes, if you know what I mean, and kind of said, we didn't do this very well, but we're gonna try and improve it, rather than, rather than members just shouting a load of weird things at them, as generally happens. They kind of nipped a lot of it in the bud and sort of said, if you really, that sort of bothered about these things, do you want to help us? Do you want to get on subcommittees? Do you want to, put your name forward to be that person to help us improve and all that kind of thing? And I think that's really, for me, the function of an AGM is not just reporting the figures from last year and how good or bad we've done in certain areas. It's about, can we engage members of the golf club to help us improve, So,
it was good. It's interesting you say that, because there was two big talking points at our AGM. Firstly is, as a golf club, right, we are absolutely desperate for a new irrigation system.
Yeah.
Like, it is failing. And we got a quote for it before COVID. And then, as you can imagine, the quote for it after COVID went up a crazy amount. I'm talking from hundreds of thousands of pounds to like millions of pounds.
Yeah.
So then it was put to the members about, how can we raise the money? How can we, cover the cost? you know, do we do tees, greens and fairways, or do we just do tees and greens to start with? So that gets put to a vote and stuff. So there was that conversation had, and the other one was around our tee booking system and roll-up groups, because, yep, you know, roll-up groups prefer not to have a tee booking system, where I think most other people now have kind of got used to the habit of booking their tee times. And
I think, in my opinion, it's just essential to run an actual proper business. You've got to have designated times, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, the roll-up groups have seemed to be going along just fine.
Yeah,
with the tee booking system. So, look, for want of a better phrase, sometimes I think it's just, you know, people that have been doing the same thing for 20 years and don't like change.
Yeah, it's exactly that, isn't it? And it's certain, you know, the older generation sometimes are a bit kind of, you know, they don't like technology and don't like having to go on their phone or an app to try and book something. But unfortunately, that's the way the world is moving. And you know, for us running a business like this, it's imperative that we get people to book. We need to know when people are coming to the golf club. We need to know, you know, how often they're playing, you know, to help them as much as it helps us. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I certainly find it here with even things like inputting your competition score in a computer. Some people still don't like and still absolutely hate. And God forbid you ask them to put something in on the app. My God.
Do you know what I find, like, as you know, obviously I use apps and I use technology, but the England Golf app for me is, it's just so simple and easy to use. They've done such a good job with it. I can't understand how people can struggle with it. But, you know, I bet these people have all got online banking on their phones. I bet they've all got, I know, sometimes like you say, like, I think some people almost don't want to do it. So they will plead their, you know, ignorance to knowing how to use apps. But yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's a weird one. But yeah, for me, it, you know, the online systems are here to stay and they're not going anywhere, are they?
Yeah. So, don't get me wrong, right? I can see the benefits of both. I generally can. I sit right on the fence with what I would prefer. It can cause me right stress sometimes trying to get a tee time booked, whereas we used to have a ball in the chute. So yeah, you just turn up and put your ball in. So getting up to the golf club knowing that you're guaranteed a game was always a benefit.
Yeah.
But some days you'd get up there at 8 o'clock and you wouldn't tee off until 20 past nine. That's not ideal. So it swings and roundabouts, but I probably just err on the side of the tee booking, because at least you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, the club I grew up at was just like a ball shoot on the first tee and you put it in, and when yours got to the bottom, you played, and that was just ridiculous. Absolutely stupid.
Yeah, but even that, so some of the guys would, you know, mainly the roll-up groups, in my experience, they would abuse that and they would put all their balls in when they weren't even ready to go out and play.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. Oh, well, that's a good chat.
All of the topic, we can talk about that, Matt. No. Let's carry on with what's going on in the world of professional golf, right? Let's focus on this week's golf. So we've got, on the PGA Tour, we've got the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, which is a slightly different format, isn't it? We've got a pairs event this week, which is very, very different to what we saw last week in Harbour Town. But is it an event that you particularly will be looking forward to or gleaning any sort of information from?
No, I mean, if it's on, I'll watch it, but it's not one that I get, it's not one I get excited about. It also, this week, it's clashing with the Chevron, the first major of the year, and the ladies' calendar. So yep. I watched a fair bit of that yesterday. And in fact, as we sit here now recording this, I've got the highlights on this morning, because I watched a bit of the DP World Tour this morning from Japan as well. I'd much rather watch the major over the Zurich, to be honest.
Okay. Have you got any? I mean, I've sort of been. I've not actually looked at the leaderboard.
I did see that the Fitzpatrick brothers, Matt and Alex, are playing together, and they shot 10 under in the first round. But there was two other 10 unders. It was the four balls, wasn't it? So it's basically it's birdie fest.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not one for being an after timer, but I had it written down in the notes when we were talking on Monday about those two, really, because Alex Fitzpatrick is a very, very good golfer, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be on tour either very soon or in the near future. And yeah, I can see those two doing well this week, and for them to have already played well in the first round. Yes, I know it's early days. It's one round. They've got to play foursomes today, four ball again tomorrow, and foursomes on Sunday. So yeah, we'll see how they get on. But you know, they could be quite a force as a team, really, those two. So yeah, we'll see. You know, Alex Fitzpatrick has got lots of pedigree with playing in the Walker Cup and being a very elite amateur for a long time. So yeah, it'd be good to watch him sort of mix it with some of the big names on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, definitely. Could be the new Molinari's. You never know.
You could see him in the Ryder Cup
in a few years' time.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the Chevron Championship then, Matt. So have you got any sort of picks for this week? Anyone you think is going to... Obviously, we've seen the first round scores, so we've kind of got a bit of an indication as to who's doing all right. But is there anyone you think on there that could sort of come through and win?
So I'll be honest, I don't have like favourite players like I do in the men's game, but I watch the ladies play. I look out for Charlie Hull, Georgia Hull. You know, who Charlie Hull didn't start very well. Georgia Hull did. She's only three off the lead after her first round. But you know, I love watching. There's so much strength in the ladies' game at the moment. It's just incredible to watch. You look down the leaderboard and, you know, it's just names after names after names. Nellie Cord is just on fire, as per usual.
Yeah, and after coming back for her injury, she seems to have sort of hit a stride, you know, quite nicely. And like you just said, Georgia Hall, she's had a great year so far, been playing some really good golf. And it almost seems every time you look at a leaderboard, she's somewhere up there, isn't she? And I guess... Other than that, I think Charlie is someone that I would look for quite a lot, and Celine Boutier as well. Those players are kind of ones I always look for on the leaderboard, just purely having, you know, met them and kind of walked a few holes and chatted with them, really. But no, they're all phenomenally good players, and like you say, the strength and depth is you know, very, very impressive, and you can almost pick 20 or 30 in here that, you know, that you could really make a case that they're going to win a major. But yeah, I think Nellie Korda looks like, after the first round, she's in a pretty good position at four under, one off the lead. And yeah, and Carlotta Siganda as well, another Solheim Cup stalwart, really great putter, someone who, you know, can get pretty hot and make a lot of birdies. So yeah, it'd be good to see her do well as well.
I'm going to attempt this name, but there is one on the leaderboard that is an interesting story. And she goes by the name. Where's she gone? Here she is. I want to say Ella Galitsky.
Okay.
So she's an amateur. I couldn't tell you what event she won to qualify for this, I have to be honest. But she shot two under. So she's three off the lead. And I think I may have seen in it part of an interview of her. Yes, I think she's like a young amateur, you know? She's
cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, very own, like, almost like Sam Bennett story at the Masters, yeah?
We could do. The other amateur in the field actually is a lady called Jess Baker, who won the English amateur, Hans Stanton.
I watched a bit of that last year.
But unfortunately, she didn't have a great first round, which is to be expected. It's a big...
She's got another round to put it right, Matt. You never know. Golf's a very funny game, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, it
should be great viewing over the next few days. And hopefully a lot of you are going to watch some of the Chevron this week. But DP World Tour's back after what seems like about 3 months off. And they've gone to Japan. So, I mean, it's a bit of a trek for the players after having such a nice long layoff to zip over the other side of the world. But Japan must be a very nice country to play golf in. Have you seen any of this so far?
Yeah, so I watched a tiny bit. It's just, for me, these events, when they're in the Far East like this, it's a case of how early do I get up and how much of it do I catch before I go to work, or a day like today, if I'm, you know, working from home or recording podcasts from home, then I will sit and watch a bit. So I watched a bit this morning. Scoring seems okay. I think 10 under's winning after two rounds. Grant Forrest, Lucas Herbert, and Jazz Jane Watananand.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that these are kind of 68, 62s. not kind of 67, 67.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've all shot kind of, you know, eight under, seven under in their second round, whereas some people shot sevens in their first. Andy Sullivan, for example, and followed that up with a level par today. So, yeah, so it should be a good week. And there's some names up there. There's Rasmus Højgaard is lurking, three back. Jordan Smith's had a good couple of days, a couple of 66s for him, sets him up for a good weekend. Hao Tong Lee. Yeah, you know, so it's, yeah, I mean, Lucas Herbert, he was, wasn't that long ago. He was, did he play in the match play?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
So, you know, he's a big draw. There's some names, right? Looks like a good weekend. I'll try and catch as much of it as I possibly can over the weekend.
Unfortunately, I think Dan Gavins is going to miss the cut by one shot after shooting two over today, so he'll be pretty good with that. I mean, that's a long way to go and MC, isn't it? But then I think the next event is in China, potentially. No, it's Korea, I think, actually. So, yeah, I think they're out there for a few weeks and then back over to Europe again. So yeah, hopefully I'll have a nice couple of days off, eat some sushi and get ready for next week. So sushi. I did see some of the guys at a restaurant, actually. I think it may have been Jordan Smith and Oliver Wilson, potentially. And they went to a sushi restaurant and it was like a robotic waiter that brought their food to the table.
Oh, okay, yeah.
it was absolutely bizarre. But it looked really, really funny. So, I mean, it must be a great part of the world to visit and go and play golf in. And, you know, generally the climate's pretty good for that sort of thing as well, isn't it? So, I'm guessing the players are having a great time. But who's your money on then this week? Who's going to win?
I don't know. It's always hard. It's always hard to pick. I'm going to go, I'll just pluck a name out. Rasmus Højgaard's going to come through, have a really good weekend. And he's going to take the win.
Very good. I'm going to put my money on. Let's have a look here. I mean, up there at the top of the leaderboard, you've got some really good. Lucas Herbert is obviously playing really well, but I'm going to say Jordan Smith. I'm going to put.
Okay, I like that pick.
But yeah, we'll see how he gets on. But yeah, you know, really good tournament in prospect, and yeah, we've also got another tournament over in Australia this week, Matt, which I know you'll absolutely love talking about. But Liv has gone to Adelaide this week, and it looks mental in terms of the fans everywhere at the tournament and the merchandise. Greg Norman was talking this week about how much money that they'd put into the Asian tour so far. I think it was $300 million, which just seems like an absolutely crazy amount of money to have invested in not even the tour that you're representing. Do you know what I mean? And I mean, that $300 million is a lot of money a lot of anyone's money, really, and potentially it's the sort of money that the DP World Tour could do with, really. But yeah, I mean, this event in Adelaide, obviously there's a draw of a few Australian players, notably Cam Smith. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot of players or a lot of fans, out there wanting to see him, as well as obviously all the other big names fresh off the Masters, the likes of Brooks and DJ and Patrick Reed that you know, had fairly decent performances over there as well. So it'd be good to watch some of that. Like I say, the hype and the kind of fanfare around it looks almost bigger than any event that they've done so far. So I will certainly be watching a little bit. Will you be watching any, Matt?
No, I will probably not be watching any.
Again, it's not at the best time, I'm going to say, because obviously with it being in Australia, it's not great in terms of the time difference. But what I will say, and this was another thing about the viewing figures, that because obviously with the way that they show Liv on the platform that they use, which I've used, and it is very good, to be honest, that the app that they have for streaming the event, that the age demographic that's watching Liv is all, it is almost 20 years lower than watches the PGA Tour. So to some extent, I think that's quite a good thing.
There's positives to it.
They were saying, I think the average age of someone watching the PGA Tour is 67.
Yeah.
Whereas on Liv, I think it's about 45, 44, something like that. So
yeah.
So that they have captured that kind of demographic they're looking for, and also they've invested a lot of money in that kind of area of the world that, you know, the Asian tour kind of operates out of, which is almost a third of the world's population in that area. Which, you know, to their credit, putting 300 million into that is obviously a great pathway for players to get through onto the Asian tour and hopefully make their way, you know, regardless of whether they play LIV or PGA Tour or DP World in the future. You know, it's kind of giving people a better start, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't sound very convinced, mate.
No, I am. Do you know, if they're giving back, then it's great.
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously got the normal names there this week, and who's to say Koepka's not going to go back to back and win two events in a row. But I think Cam Smith's probably going to have a fairly decent week over there, wouldn't you say?
Well, I don't know if I'm looking at the right leaderboard, because I have to Google it to find, because I think they've had the first round. And those guys are seven off the lead.
I've heard the first round, but yeah, because it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday job. But,
It just says at the top of the website.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, it's for everyone. God, we're talking on Friday morning now, aren't we? And it's
yeah.
So they will have done. Yeah.
So yeah, but no. Good luck to Taylor Gooch and Dean Burmester and Richard Bland battling it out this weekend.
Oh, nice. Well, particularly as I saw Richard Bland in the week had some pretty bad news as well, so it'd be nice to see him play well.
Yeah, it would.
And win a massive event like this. So yeah, and obviously flying the flag for England, which would be wonderful. So let's move on to a couple of the topics that we're going to talk about. And number one, which we've had a lot of talk about this over the last couple of years on our various Golf Shape platforms, but also we've spoken about it previously on the podcast, and that's the World Handicap System, WHS, right? Some people love it, some people hate it. Again, back to the conversation we were having earlier about people and change and how they just don't like things changing. This is probably the biggest change we've had in amateur golf in certainly my lifetime, I think, in terms of the way your scores are recorded and how your handicap works. Some people absolutely abuse the system. Some people, like yourself, use it to the full extent of its capabilities and you know, really enjoy keeping your handicap on it. What's your take on it, Matt?
Well, do you know what? It's interesting you just say that someone like me uses it to its full capabilities. I feel like you could maybe go a little step further than that and say someone like me is using it as it has been designed to be used, i.e. returning my score. You know, look, absolutely not 100% of the time that I play, but I would go as far as saying 99% of the time that I play, I will put my score in. I want my handicap to be reflective of how I'm playing. I want my handicap to not just be reflective, right? But there's nothing worse when you're not playing that great and you're struggling to get, you know, close to 34, 35, 36 points. And, you know, from time to time, getting that extra shot back means that you're able to compete again. And then that starts to fill you with confidence. And the quicker it goes up, the quicker it goes down, etc. But look, I know that we have slightly differing opinions on the system. And I think that makes for good debate, right? Because I love the system. I think it's great. I wish that everybody used it how it was designed to be used. And then half of the problems that people think the system is causing wouldn't be there. But I would also say that I believe that half of the problems that the people think the system is causing is not actually being caused by the system itself. The system is just a driver. It's a way to track your handicap. It's, you know, like you said, if, you know, people do abuse it, but that's not the system's fault. That's the people's fault.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I just think it, you know, I don't mind the system at all. I mean, I don't have a handicap, so it doesn't really affect me at all. But in my day-to-day job as a golf pro, it obviously does, because I'm administering competitions and kind of all the handicapping kind of stuff that goes along with it. And obviously when there was the big changeover from one system to the other, and sometimes it didn't map scores across properly, etc. But we're through all that kind of teething problems at the start, which was inevitable, really. But I just think it's a system that's so much easier to manipulate than the old one was for the people that aren't honest, and that's the problem. So it's the old system, in order to get your handicap up, obviously you only went up 0.1 if you played badly, didn't you? Yeah. So it could take a, say, a category one golfer who is off 2 handicap to get to 6, you've got to play bad 40 times, right? In this system, you don't have to play bad anywhere near the amount of times to jump that amount of shots.
But there was also mechanisms in the old system that showed if somebody had like 10.1s back in a row, then they may have got extra shots back, right? It gets flagged up by the handicap committee. And this is something, so look, it's easy for me to sit and say, oh, you know, the clubs can take more responsibility, but the clubs can take more responsibility. The clubs have got every tool that they need to spot people that are abusing the system or manipulating the system. Listen, whether that be to get lower or whether that to be get higher, you know, it's, if the club wanted to find anybody, they absolutely could. I have every faith that they could. And I know people that manipulate the old system. You know, it happens. So in terms of people that want to do that, they will always find the way. Yes, I think that it might be easier to do it with this system, but I would also go as far as saying it's easier to spot those people with this system. And that's where the golf clubs can kind of step in a bit and flag these people and say, look, you know, we've noticed this irregularity, or we've noticed that, you know, you only ever put cards in on this day when you're playing with this person, or, you know, we've noticed your last 4 scores that you've put in have, for example, have all been good. We've checked your tee times and we see that you're only signing into your round an hour and a half after you tee off, because you can cross-reference that to the tee booking system. There's so many different ways. You know, I think the most common thing is people saying that they're going to put a round in and then not putting that round in. And I know for a fact at my golf club that has been flagged and people have been spoken to, and they've said, right, you've signed up to put a score in and then you haven't put your score in. Why is that? So, yeah, look, I know there's... I see a lot of things on social media, and I think there's two parts to the problem with the new system. One is you have got people that have played golf for so long with a system that just don't like change. I also think that those people potentially understood the old system, the old Congo system, inside and out. And because they don't understand this inside and out, it's crap. Straight off the bat, because I don't understand it, it's crap.
Yeah, I get that. And there is always that kind of, like you say, they just don't like anything that's different, do they? And particularly if it's cloud-based and it's on an app and all that kind of stuff, they're just not happy with that.
No.
But when the system first came in, it was very, very harsh on people with low handicaps, in terms of a lot of the players here got cut to ridiculously low handicaps. Like, guys that have been off scratch their whole life were all of a sudden off +2.
Okay, but what... So, firstly, I don't want to interrupt, but... So, don't forget that that is not their playing handicap. That's the first thing I would always say to people, because people look at their handicap and think, oh, look, he's off +2. But does that mean that they, when they go and play, are they... What's their court handicap? Are they... +1, are they scratch? Are they +4? Yeah, do you know what I mean? Totally. So that's the first thing to look at straight away, because this was designed really so that your handicaps can travel as well.
I get that. And you know, Howley is quite a difficult golf course, right? So, and in terms of course rating, it's quite difficult. So if you are if you were a scratch handicapper in that old system, you're now almost being cut shot. So in my opinion, those guys should have been going the other way. They should have been going from scratch to like 2 handicap, because that's what's happened with the higher handicaps. So because it's tough, they've got more shots, right?
Yeah, because they're, for want of a better word, because they're not as good at golf.
Well, yeah, but so if you were playing off 15 at Howley, which is a difficult golf course, when it changed, if the guys off low handicaps are getting cut 2 shots, surely you should be as well.
No, because the disparity between the better golfer and so for example, right? So if you take a scratch golfer on a par, what's a par at Howley? Let's use Howley as 71. An example. 71. So if you looked at your say your last 8 rounds for a scratch golfer at Howley as a par 71, they might shoot 70 a couple of times. They might shoot 72, 73 frequently, and then their worst might be a 75 or a 76. Whereas you take a 15 handicapper, for example, so par to them is, 86. They might shoot 84, 83, but they might also shoot 95, 96. So the gap either side of the handicap index is always a lot greater. You can always play worse as a higher handicapper than what you do as a low handicapper.
But then you're then saying, though, that so say a 15 handicapper all of a sudden overnight has gone from 15 to 18, right? At Howley.
Yeah.
Whereas the guy off scratch has gone from scratch to +2, right? So there's now 5 shots difference.
Okay. On their index. No. On their index is 5 shots different.
Yeah.
So if the right.
But then if you play a difficult golf course as a +2 handicapper like this, you're only getting 1 shot back, whereas the 15 that's gone to 18 is actually probably going to slope up even more.
Because they need it. Because they need it more.
That's not what handicapping is all about, is it? You're giving them you've almost made it so much easier for higher handicappers to play to the handicap all the time, which it shouldn't be easy. Because for a scratch guy to play to the handicap all the time is really hard.
Yeah, it's difficult to maintain, but you've got that ability.
One out of every 6 times that you play, and I reckon the system makes it more like 3 out of every 6 times that you play for higher handicappers.
But the system, the system isn't doing that.
Well, it is, because it's giving higher handicappers more shots and lower handicappers less. So it's not fair, is it?
Well, it is fair because the higher handicappers need the shots
to have a level
playing field.
Well, I would argue that if they were off 15 already and now all of a sudden they've gone to 18 and now get an extra shot, so 20, do they need 5 shots more than they did last week? No, they don't.
No, obviously not from week to week, but your handicap is not. You know, based from week to week, is it? It's based on...
That's what happened overnight with the system, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course, there was always... Okay, but there was always going to be...
They did say it would take a while for people to find their level, if you like, right?
Yeah, of course. So I couldn't sit here and say to you, when the system changed to WHS, everything was perfect, because it wasn't. Depending on historical data that people had, depending on... you might have had somebody that played off 2 for years but come back to golf and has played off 10, for example. You know, everybody that you speak to will have one of these kind of stick out like a sore thumb cases that, oh, well, I know this guy and I know this guy. But, you know, for every guy that you know that, you know, went from scratch to 2, you might know 10 people whose handicap index is roughly stayed the same. Because what we tend to do is we tend to focus on the anomalies. We tend to focus on the things that stick out more. But in general, yeah, you're always going to get some funny cases when a system like that changes. And like you say, it's a seismic change in the way that golf was run in this country. So it wasn't going to be, you know, a smooth sailing from the word go. But by now, if people are using the system properly, there shouldn't be any issues with it. There shouldn't.
We still see some ridiculous or far more ridiculous scores now in comps than we ever did before. With people, you know, obviously there are handicaps of the higher handicaps particularly have been inflated to a level now where, you know, if they have their good round where they normally would have played to 15, all of a sudden now they've got those extra shots, so that all of a sudden there's 46 and 47 points coming in like quite regularly, and you're just like, Jesus, how as a scratch golfer are you ever supposed to compete with that?
Well, you're not supposed to, because scratch golfers should be in a different division. Yeah, and again, that's
they're in the same medal though, aren't they? So your big club comps where you're playing like for gold letters on a board or whatever, you're still playing with these guys who've got in my opinion, an inflated handicap. How as a scratch player can you compete with that? Because it's almost saying, well, you should be able to shoot 10 under as well. Well, no, I can't.
No, so with that, so then you have to look at an individual case. And if somebody's shooting 46 points in a major competition, then the first thing that I would be doing is I'd be looking at their scores. I'd be looking at who they're playing with. I'd be looking at, are they putting regular cards in? If they're putting bad cards in, are they putting bad cards in with the same person every single time they're playing?
But this
you also can't claim that every person that gets 46 points has cheated their way to that 46 points.
I'm not saying they have. I'm saying they've played golf and the handicap's just ridiculous that they've shot that score.
Yeah. So if their handicap is ridiculous,
they are as a golfer. Yeah, because they are. If you're capable of shooting, 11 under your handicap, in my opinion, that shouldn't be possible, because for a scratch player, it's impossible for them to shoot 11 under their handicap.
Absolutely, I agree with you. But if somebody is shooting 11 under their handicap, that is not the system's fault.
I get it. If that's the player's fault. I've done it myself as a junior when you're coming down, and I've been off. I remember shooting a score like that in a medal when I was about 13 or 14. I shot 46 points. I shot 10 under my handicap. I was off 20 and I shot 10 over or something. Which you can get, that's going to happen. But for people who are playing week in, week out and have played for years, it shouldn't be happening.
No, you're absolutely right, and it shouldn't be happening. But do you know what? There were scores of 45, 46 points with the old system. There will be scores of 45 and 46 points with the new system. I think my overriding feeling is that people are, nobody likes it when they have a good day on the golf course and somebody comes in with a crazy score, right? I don't see it that often anymore. I generally don't. But it's very easy now to say, well, that's World Handicap System's fault. No, if somebody's shooting 46 points and their handicap is ridiculous because you know that they're capable of doing better than that and they know that, that is not the handicap system's fault. That is the player's fault. That is solely on the player. If you've got someone that's coming to see you, played off 20, 21, and they've had 6 or 7 lessons and they've not been able to play in any comps and they've really worked hard and they go out and shoot 46 points, slightly different scenario, because their handicap will come down and... like anyone's would that shoots 46 points, by the way. But in that scenario, that is not the fault of the system. We had 46 points with the old system, and nobody blamed the old system for that. It's people sitting on their handicaps.
Because of the way the algorithm works, I've seen people have win comps and the handicap's gone up. You know what I mean?
But that obviously depends on the what they've got coming off.
Well, of course it does, but then the old system would have just chopped the handicap, wouldn't it? Which is right.
Not necessarily, because
they'd have shot however many under their handicap, and then the standard scratch had been worked out from that, and then they would have obviously been cut. But I'm not saying this system's bad. I'm not. But what I'm saying is, I think the calculation that they've got from a scratch player to basically a bogey golfer isn't quite right. I think that now it'd be interesting to see what happens this season, but all the way through last season, our big medal competitions, I don't think anyone that was off single figures won anything, because it's nearly impossible because of the scores that people are shooting. So as a category one player, so...
The other thing that's worth pointing out, right, is that when you talk about scratch golfers and maybe low single figure golfers, let's say anything from 5 below, right? Yeah. They're probably only representing 5% of your golf club.
Well, I get that. We've still got quite a lot of that kind of handicap bracket really here, but
what I'm saying, right, is if you ratio that, right, guess what? The majority of your competitions are going to be won by people of maybe 10 and over, purely based on a mathematical fact that there's more of them.
I get what you're saying, but also, if you were to probably look at the top 10 scores, they're all between 43 and 47 points, yeah? Whereas a guy in category one, it's very... they might shoot a score like that once in their life, do you know what I mean? Like a 5 or a 6 under par. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but you can't gear a system towards It's supposed to be fair, isn't it?
It's supposed to represent like someone's, you know, someone's actual kind of playing ability. Yeah. So
yeah. But you know, you are talking to someone that, you know, is a low single figure golfer. Well, exactly. And I'm not going to go and play in a comp tomorrow, for example, and think to myself, I don't have a chance of winning today. So what's the point? You know, I generally
scratch or plus one or whatever. Now, I would play in the comp still, but almost just to keep my handicap. I wouldn't ever expect to do anything.
Yeah. See, that's where your divisions. That's where you need to make sure that you've got your separate divisions. And I appreciate you can't do that with major comps, board comps, but
we still do have divisions, obviously, and pay out the different divisions. So you could still win money in your division, but that's not what you're playing in the comp for, is it? You're playing in it to win a trophy and get your name on the board. And I just think, if I got my handicap back right now, it would probably be somewhere between scratch and plus one, right? And I just know I wouldn't win. I'd never win anything.
So with
maybe you know obviously you've got club championship and
we've got a number of scratch competitions, but look, there are other things that the clubs can do in the competitions. You know, like we've had an email yesterday to say anyone entering a board competition or a major comp, whatever you call them at your club, needs to have entered 10 rounds in the last year. I'm pretty sure it said competitive rounds to even qualify for that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is obviously, I think more and more of that's going to come in where you've got kind of almost barriers to different handicaps or people who have kind of protected their handicap or not put as many scores in, stuff like that. And I'm all for that. You know, I think it's something that it's going to evolve, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's not going to be like straight away. It's going to keep moving on. And I'm happy to, you know, to help people with this and to work through it. But like I say, for me, I just think it's not quite right between your low and high handicaps at the minute. And I think that needs addressing personally. I think it should be, you know, everyone should be on a level playing field. And I don't feel like it is that at the minute. But, you know, like I say, hopefully in the future it will be. And I'm pretty sure England Golf are looking at this very stringently to try and find the best way of doing it. And they weren't going to get it right straight away because no one ever does, do they?
No, they don't.
But it's been interesting having a conversation. And
it's a good chat.
Yeah. And yeah, let us know what you think as well. Have you got problems with the WHS system? Do you absolutely love it? Has it made you play the best golf of your life? Who knows? But yeah, please get in contact with us on the usual social media channels. So we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. Also myself and Matt are, and you can always email us at info@golfshake.com. Hopefully you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Sorry it's a little bit late, but yeah, the gremlins we had in our system wouldn't allow us to get it out on Monday as usual. We should be back with you on Monday again, looking through everything that's gone on in the world of golf this week. But for now, from me and Matt, see you later. Bye.
Bye.